Welcome to the Rundown. I'm Kyle Wall here with you. We're going to jump in to week three of college football. Yes, it goes fast. We're already in week three. Week zero, one, and two out of the way. Week two gave us plenty of answers, but also brought plenty of new questions. How about the quarterbacks over there in the SEC? Man, are they swinging these betting markets with every throw they make? The national powers just shook off their early jitters, and they claimed their dominance last week in week two. I would say that was probably the narrative of the week. South Florida with that big win. They might have just found their moment after that win from last week. We'll have time to talk about that game in a little bit here. We'll try to get through this pretty fast for the Rundown Nation. Make you guys happy. No Mr. Story today, the regular guest here on the Rundown. He will be with us for the next couple weeks, I believe. So I think that'll make Rundown Nation happy. Week three is going to bring us some matchups. They're going to define September. We're going to have to see who wins these games. We're going to get a better picture of the playoffs and eventually the national championship, obviously, which is what we're all here for. We're here to break that down on the show for the bettors. Let's do a quick rewind of week two. Again, I don't want to do too deep of a dive this week. It's just me. I don't want to bore you guys and make you have to listen to my voice for too long. Oklahoma, man, they steadied that ship. After that nervous week one against Tulane, the Sooners answered big with a 38-17 win over Michigan, a very respected program this year. A team that I bet on, a team that I backed last week and definitely lost money on that. It was not a good showing for Michigan. Was not happy with that Wolverine football team as a whole. John Mateer, though, if you're an Oklahoma fan, you got to be happy you got this man on your team. He looked fantastic. 258 yards passing, two touchdowns. The defense over there in Oklahoma, they had Michigan turn the ball over a couple times. You don't want to give the ball away. We should be giving the ball away, Michigan. Come on now, Wolverines. Just giving that football away. It's on sale. Come and get it, Oklahoma. And they did. They got it twice. This game, it kind of flips the market's thinking on Oklahoma. A lot of people maybe now thinking Oklahoma has a chance. Myself, you know, I'm not going to put it past them because looking at Mateer, not only can he throw the football, but man, he can get out of situations with his legs. He can extend that play. I know two or three different plays I can think of just off the top of my head where he, with his legs, extended that play, made a great pass. One I'm thinking about made a great pass downfield on the streak and just, I mean, plays like that win football games and get you in the playoffs. Maybe. We'll see. South Florida, big surprise. Went out there into Gainesville, into Florida's home, and shocked him with that 31-24 win. And they were looking good most of the game, too. This is not one of the ones where South Florida at the end came down and had a couple touchdowns where Florida was leading the game most of the time. That was not the case. South Florida just looked good throughout that game. Byron Brown threw for two touchdowns, and he ran for another. The defense forced two takeaways and held Florida to 7 points after halftime. That Florida Gators offense was held to 7 points, which I'm not happy about considering I have their quarterback on my fantasy team, Mr. Langley, but he's on my injured reserve still. Taking advantage of that injured reserve over there in the fantasy, so I guess it's not too bad for me. But South Florida, what a great football team. They're playing Miami this week. Maybe we'll have time to talk about that game. It will be a good one. I mentioned the SEC quarterbacks. Their volatility is on display. We saw Ty Simpson week one struggle against FSU. Looked really bad. But last week, he rebounded. I mean, 73-0. Come on now, Alabama. Take it easy on ULM. I wonder what Caleb DeBoer had to say to them throughout the week to get that 73-0 route taken care of. Arkansas, Taylen Green over there, quarterback, QB1 for Arkansas. He rushed for 107 yards and two touchdowns in 35-21 win over Memphis, but he only hit 60% of his passes. You got to do a little bit better than that. You want a better pass rating than that. I didn't get to watch all that game, so I'm not exactly sure how those passes were attributed, if they were difficult ones, or if he's just doing dump offs where he's not hitting them, similar to a quarterback over there at Iowa we have. Mr. Pribula from Missouri. I know Story's big on this guy. He had a great game. 23-29 passing, 41-14 win over Vanderbilt. I mean, he's one of the steadiest performers in the league. I wish I had him on my fantasy team because that steadiness, that will help a team. Texas A&M, Marcel Reed, another quarterback over there in the SEC. Quite volatile. But last week, he led two quick scoring drives against UTSA, which will help your team. You want to get out there and you want to score quick. But he did leave with an injury, and that will be a factor to consider this week when they play Notre Dame. Another game we might get to jump into. But the Aggies still cruise 48-14, even though Mr. Marcel Reed was hurt for most of that game. National heavyweights, I talked about them before. Oregon, 69-3 win over Oklahoma State. 69-3. We're not talking about some FCS team. We're not talking about Alabama playing ULM. We're talking about Oregon almost scoring as many points as Alabama scored against ULM, but playing a team in Oklahoma State that's respectable. I mean, Jesus, this team is good. Watch out for the Ducks the rest of this season. 600 plus yards of offense, 6 rushing touchdowns. You get that every game. My God, these guys are a force to be reckoned with. Ohio State, 70-0 win over Grambling. Yeah, they scored one more point than Oregon, but they were playing Grambling State. They weren't playing a Mike Gundy-coached Oklahoma State, which, by the way, that Oklahoma State loss, I think that was the worst ever for Mr. Gundy in his career. I saw it on one of the news shows, I believe. I don't have it in my notes, but I'm pretty sure I saw that, and it does seem accurate. So Texas, 38-7, they bounced back over San Jose State. That was kind of expected after their week one loss to Ohio State. Mr. Manning looked pretty good, 300-plus passing yards. I believe most of it was his. I don't know if he came out at the end. I didn't watch the end of that game, but I believe most of the passing yards were his. And he settled down. He looked like a better quarterback. Maybe still not up to the hype that we had him at the beginning of the season, or most people had him at the beginning of the season, but still looked good. Well, what do we take away from week two? Week one, we had FBS versus FBS teams. They were scoring 23 points per team on average. And again, that takes away the FCS games where a lot of those teams were playing lower division teams. We're just talking about FBS versus FBS. There's 23 points scored per team. Week two, we get 27 points scored per team, which is kind of what we'd expect. We'd expect a little time for that offense to get in rhythm. Mr. Story and I were talking week one or week zero, maybe even, about whether, the question was posed to me, whether it's harder for an offense to settle in or a defense to settle in. Well, in my opinion, it's harder for an offense to settle in because the offense just has so many things they have to worry about. And I think once they get to cruising speed, they're a little better off. Whereas the defense, you know, defense is defense. Get the ball, stop them. A little bit easier to settle in. The schemes are usually a little bit easier than all those play calls that these poor quarterbacks, offensive linemen, and wide receivers have to know these days. I feel sorry for them a little bit, but not really because they get money now. So it's worth it, I guess. Personnel shifts. There's a lot of personnel shifts, and they're shaping the scripts, you know. They're changing lines. Colorado, Ryan Stubb threw for 157 yards and 2 touchdowns. He may start Friday versus Houston. Aggressive quarterback play, when you get that, you're going to get volatility in spreads and totals, and we're kind of seeing that with the moves on that Colorado-Houston line. And again, that is a Friday game. That's not a Saturday game. Iowa, our Iowa Hawkeyes, we lost Ostrenga, our tight end over there. You know, Iowa is tight end U. We should trademark that. The tight end U, maybe. That's a little dig at Ohio State. But we lost our starting tight end, I guess now for the second year in a row. It just happens. That's the way it is when you're an Iowa fan. But he got hurt. I don't think he's playing next game because his Achilles was hurt, and he's going to be out for quite a few games. So that's unfortunate news. That obviously changed the lines a little bit because Iowa, not much offense. And the offense we do have usually relies on our tight end. And if we don't have our best tight end, well, it's not the best thing for the Hawkeyes. Kentucky, Zach Calzada, shoulder. He's going to be questionable this week. We'll see if freshman Cutter Bowley speeds the tempo up if he plays. I think he might. Books will adjust totals accordingly on this one because you got those two different quarterbacks in. I mean, you got that speedy, up-tempo quarterback in Bowley. That total is going to shoot up. You're going to get 3 or 4 more points at least on that total. But if they think Calzada is going to be the shot caller on that one, probably get a little low total. So watch what you're betting on that one when you're betting over-unders. Let's dive in to week three games. Again, I want to try to keep this pretty quick for you guys today. First game we'll jump into, Texas A&M, Notre Dame. Man, it's a big one. I'm excited for this football game. I always like when Notre Dame and Texas A&M play. This one is in South Bend. Notre Dame is the home team. If you want to watch this one, it's on NBC Peacock at 6:30 on Saturday. We'll use, let's use ESPN Betlines. I don't think we've used them yet this season. We'll use ESPN Betlines for this one. Notre Dame on ESPN Bet, -6.5. We got a total of 49.5, so just under that 50 number. I mean, a key story in this one, I mentioned it here at the intro, Marcel Reed, does he play football or not? Everything that we've seen out of him over the past day or two, talking to the press, says he's playing for that Notre Dame game. But two questions. One, does he actually play? Because ultimately, it might not be his decision. Two, if he does play, does his injury from last game affect him? But in the last two games, he's got 5 touchdowns. You know, we'll see. If he's limited A&M scoring pace, he's likely to take a hit. Notre Dame freshman CJ Carr, he's doing decent over there. Just got to get that completion percentage. We've seen this with a lot of quarterbacks this year. They're just not completing at a completion percentage rate we're used to. But Mr. Carr does have 5 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. Not bad for as much as he's throwing the football compared to Notre Dame in recent years anyways. He's shown efficiency, but those, you know, just got to rein in those turnovers a little bit. 2 interceptions, not a lot, but still a lot better if that was 0. You got to remember, though, Notre Dame has played some football teams this year. Stats that matter, A&M, 7.2 yards per play. Top 15 nationally. If you want to talk about something on the Notre Dame side, well, they're converting 54% on third down. That's pretty good. If you're converting over 50% on third down, that means you're likely getting yourself set up into situations to help you with that third down conversion. And one thing we want to look for in this game is those defenses. They're both allowing under 300 yards per game. And I know some of you are older to this podcast, listening to this podcast, and you're thinking, well, 300 yards per game, that's a ton. Well, it's really not. That's pretty good. This day and age, 300 yards is not, as far as total offense anyways, is not a lot of offense. I know back in 2000, in the 90s, if you're giving up 300 yards per game, you're probably bottom 25th percentile. But now that puts you in top 25 probably for both those defenses. So we'll see how those defenses perform. Most important thing on this one, though, is Reed's availability. We'll see if he can go. As far as the game, I'll be putting money on Notre Dame. I'll be taking the home favorite. If it goes over 7, I will not. But anything under a touchdown, I just like Notre Dame at home, especially with that possibility of Reed being hurt or not performing to his best, which is not what I'm hoping for, but it's just what I kind of expect after that injury. Let's jump into another game. We got an SEC big dog fight here. Georgia at Tennessee. They're traveling to the Volunteers. Georgia, line right now on ESPN Bet, -3.5. A little bit closer spread than I would have expected. I expect Georgia's giving more points, but they're not. We're talking about a total that's the same as the game we just spoke about, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. We're talking about a total of 49.5 in this one. I mean, Georgia's dominated this series lately. They're averaging plus 25 points in the last 4. So if you bet Georgia minus 24 in the last 4 games, you'd be up money right now. Well, depending on how you put your bets, how big they were. But still, that's just incredible. The last 4 meetings, they're averaging a 25-point margin. You got to remember, Tennessee has been good over the past few years. So Georgia's just had their number for some reason. We'll see if Joey Aguilar can get it done this week against that Bulldog defense. Always tough defense to play against, Bulldog defense, especially talking about their secondary. Their secondary usually comes to perform. He's had 9.4 yards an attempt per attempt, 6 completions of 40-plus yards already. That's incredible considering we've only had a couple games so far. Those vertical punches, man, they hurt a defense, but Georgia is known to stop that. That's one of their reasons their defense is so good. So expect to see that battle between Georgia defense stopping those big over-the-top vertical passes and obviously Tennessee wanting to complete those with Mr. Aguilar. Stats that matter. We're going to jump into Georgia's defense, which I just spoke about. My goodness, only 21 points allowed through 2 games. I don't know. How much faith do we put in that? Not a ton. You know, not saying they've played the best competition, but still, keeping it under 21 points is, I think, always a goal of any college football team. This day and age, anyways. Maybe going back 20, 30 years, it would be 14. But these days, I think keeping it under 21 is a respectable defense. Tennessee offense, obviously, on their side of the ball, we want to look at the stats over there because that's what matters for Tennessee. They want to play offense. They don't want to play defense. And I apologize to the Tennessee defensive players. I'm not saying they're terrible, but that's just not their goal. That's not their mentality as far as playing football over the past 3 or 4 years with Mr. Heupel coaching them up. 34 points per game Tennessee has had, 7.1 yards per play. So something's got to give, right? Georgia's got to allow more than those 21 points, or Tennessee's got to get less than 34 points per game. I'm guessing the former there. Georgia against the spread, though, in this one, in the last 6 SEC road games, they're 1-5. That stat really surprises me because Georgia's been a good football team and they, in my opinion, generally travel well. But I guess the bookmakers are accounting for that. So Georgia 1-5 last SEC road games. It don't affect my opinion in this one. I always like to bet against Tennessee and I always like to bet Georgia. So kind of an easy road favorite bet for me here. Let's jump into another game. We got Miami at South Florida. This one we wouldn't even be talking about probably if South Florida hadn't gotten that win in Gainesville last week against the Florida Gators. Huge win for that program. Talked about earlier in the episode. This one's at 3:30 p.m. on Saturday. It's on the CW network. So whatever that means, I don't know. It's one of those channels out there. Sorry, guys. I don't watch TV. I watch college football, and that's about it. So we're at whatever the CW network is. If you want to watch this one, 3:30 p.m. Saturday, it'll be on the CW network. Miami minus 17.5 in this football game. That would probably be a 21-point number. And I'm not even exaggerating. That would probably be a 21-point number if not for that win last week of South Florida's. Total in this one, 56.5, a little higher than we saw with the other ones that were just under 50 points. Key story, like I mentioned, this signature upset at Florida. It sets the stage for what's hopefully going to be a good football game. I hope the lines makers have this one wrong. I don't know that they do, but I hope they have it wrong with that minus 17.5. I hope we get a close game. I hope that Mr. Byron Brown, you know, he continues to not throw interceptions, because we have 240 passing attempts and not one interception for the man. That would be fantastic if he can continue that. That is a really good stat there. Maybe I have to check that golden ratio, because you know here at the Rundown, we like that touchdown to interception golden ratio. UCF is also plus 3 in turnover margin. I mean, you want the football. You want your offense to have that football. You want your defense to be off the field. You get plus 3 in turnover margin, that helps your team. But they got the trouble of having to deal with that Miami defense. 3.1 yards per carry allowed. I mean, if you want to run the football, you're going to have a tough time against this Miami defense. They're going to come up to the front and box you. And even when they don't have to put 9 men up there, they're still going to get that run game stopped with probably 7 up front. So I hope that when they do run it, USF can get some good, decent traction in the run game to set up that pass game that they have. Miami has 83 plays per game. Tempo, it's their weapon. It's how they beat teams. Can that USF defense respond to that fast pace? We shall see. USF is 7-for-7 in red zone conversions last week. They got the ball in Florida's territory in the red zone. They were scoring 7-for-7. That's a huge thing. Miami got to stop them, because we see it's probably the hardest part of the field to score on these days is in that red zone. I don't know why. It's just probably because the defense is so clustered, you don't have as much space to work with. But we see a lot of teams these days not doing so great in the red zone. USF did do a good job last week with that 7-for-7 red zone conversion. Again, if you're betting this one, you think USF is going to keep the ball safe? You think they can hang with this Miami defense and push them a little bit? You know, stay inside the number. We'll see how it goes. If Miami forces those turnovers, though, the Canes are going to blow this one open. So, again, I hope USF can get this done. I will be cheering for them, but I will not have any money on this game. I don't see anything I like on this one. And I don't think I can watch this game again. I don't know if I misprinted this or what. What the hell is the CW network? I have no idea. But let's jump into something that we've been doing this year. It's called Story Time. It's meant for a regular guest. Mr. Story. It's a little pun on the name. I love this segment. Now, over the last 2 weeks, we've covered the bread and butter of sports betting. First, money lines. Pick the winner straight up. You want to learn a little bit about money lines? Head back to our week one episode from 2025. I went over that with you guys. Last week, week two episode, Mr. Story did a fantastic job describing point spreads, what they are, what they mean, essentially how much a team wins or loses by, right? When we make those bets. If you guys want to check that one out, that was week two, last week's episode where Mr. Story broke those down for you. This week, we're moving into something a little bit newer to most people anyways. They're called exchange traded event contracts. Yeah, it's a fancy name, but it really boils down to a money line bet. I'll jump in and I'll show you why. Before we get too far into them, I want to explain why someone would use these exchange traded event contracts. One, the juice is generally much, much lower. You're talking about getting -110 bets on, you know, a standard spread, a high volume bet spread. Over there on a lot of the exchanges, the bigger exchanges, you want to make a bet on that money line, it equates to maybe a -102. So, you're paying very little juice. It's not really considered juice in this aspect, but if you were to equate it, you're paying very little juice for these bets. You're not paying as much to make the bet. The second reason a lot of people want to use this, well, the reason I use it, because I can't bet at, I'm limited at almost all the sports books. What'll happen is if you become profitable better, you're going to get limited. The books are not going to take your action anymore. You try to place a $100 bet, they're going to tell you, no, sorry. You want to place 30 cents? We'll let you place 30 cents because they don't outright ban you. They just limit you because it makes it easier for them legally to do things. Over here on the exchanges, you're not going to get banned. You're going to be allowed to bet for as long as you want because your counterparty is another person. It's not the actual sports book. So they really have no incentive to limit you. They want you to bet. They actually want that liquidity. They want you to be on there betting no matter how good you are or bad you are for that matter. But let's jump into explaining a little bit about these event contracts. What are they? They tie to money lines a little bit. Here's the connection. A money line bet at the sports book and event contract on exchange are both answering the same yes or no question. Will Team A win? Will this total be over? Simple as that. It's a binary thing. Will this happen or not? The difference is with a sports book, you place your bet and you're locked in till the end. With an event contract, you're not betting against the house. You're not betting against DraftKings. You're not betting against FanDuel. You're trading with other people. And because it's structured like a contract, like an asset, it can be bought and sold just like any other asset, like a stock or a house or whatever. But these are much more liquid products that you can obviously sell or buy right away. So what does it mean buy? What happens when you buy one? Let's say you buy a yes, Texas beats Oklahoma contract at 50 cents. And a lot of these exchanges, they do it different ways, but a lot of them use this 50 cents, you know, 0 cents to 100 cents, which will make a little more sense. Sense. Come on, get your stuff together. I got to use a different word, which will make a little more sense in the future when I go through things. But let's say we buy that yes, Texas beats Oklahoma contract at 50 cents. That 50 cents is literally, using Mr. Story's word here, literally the market's view of the probability. A 50% chance Texas wins. That's what's so fantastic about these contracts. If you hold it to the end and Texas wins, your contract settles at $1. You paid 50 cents, you get a dollar back. You're netting a 50 cent profit. If Texas loses, your contract settles at zero and you're out the 50 cents that you paid for that contract. That's the core mechanic. $1 if you're right, zero if you're wrong. And the price that you paid at the beginning, that sets your risk to reward. If you buy an underdog at 30 cents, you cannot lose more than 30 cents. That's your risk. Now you can make up to 70 cents because the max reward you can get is $100 back or 100 cents back in this case. Again, a 70 cent profit that would be. Pros and cons. Why would anyone use these event contracts instead of money line? Well, I already told you a couple, but there's also other ones. Transparency, the price is the probability. It's right there in front of you. Moneyline really is just a way to obfuscate people from understanding what they're betting. You know, if you saw the probabilities at 52.5% and 52.5% every time, which is what a minus 110 line is essentially, you might not bet because you're realizing real quick that you're paying 2.5% to make that bet. In this instance, with these event contracts, the probability is right there in front of you. If you're buying for 20 cents, that's a 20% probability. That's what you're buying. Flexibility, this is a huge factor in a pro. I should say it's a huge pro for it. I mean, you can sell out before the game ends. You can lock in your profit or you can limit your losses if it looks like your bet has no chance of winning. You don't have to hold these as you do with a traditional sports book. You have to hold your bet, right, until the end of the game and then either cash your ticket or you throw it away if you lose it. But the only other option you really have is to hedge with a offsetting bet, but then you're paying the juice again, and then you're having to risk yourself getting limited because most books, they don't like you to hedge your bets like that. You have to go to another book to do it, and then you're dealing with all kinds of complexities. With this scenario, using these event contracts, you don't have to worry about that. You can hedge it off simply by taking that thing you bought, that Texas beats Oklahoma 50 cents you bought, and selling it for whatever you want. Let's say you sell it for 70 cents because Texas got up big in the game. You now sold that 50 cents for 70 cents and you made a 20 cent profit off of that before the game is over. You didn't even have to hold it till the end of the game. Now you could have held it and potentially made more, but you know, Texas might not have won that football game. So it's really a huge pro that you can sell out before the game ends. Trading feel, another pro. You're working with a live market. You know, this is not just placing a static bet. I know there's cash out features. Don't ever use a cash out feature, by the way. I have never seen a book that gives you fair odds on a cash out feature. I can't speak for all of them, but I've never seen a book that gives you fair odds on a cash out. They always want money from you to cash it out. When you're working with this live market, you know, that bet is not static. It's changing. It's got volatility to it. you can take advantage of that and make more what are called trades against it. The cons, complexity, it's actually not more complex. It's actually much more simple, but it does take time to think about it. And when you're trying to understand it at first, it seems a little bit more complex, especially if you're not new to betting, especially if you understand betting and you're more of a, you know, sharp bettor. It takes a little bit of time to understand that probability aspect rather than the conversion of odds that we're used to seeing. Discipline is needed. You know, just because you can trade in and out doesn't mean you want to do that all the time, because you can get yourself in a situation where you're doing a little too much, right? It's like anything else in gambling. You don't want to become addicted to it. That's how you really hurt yourself. That's what the sports books want. They want you to become addicted. As much as they say they don't want you to do that, as much as they've created this coalition that's trying to force out the bad gamblers, that's not what it's doing. It's just trying to pinpoint the sharps so they can get rid of them quicker. But they want the money. That's how they profit, is off of bettors like that. With these exchange traded contracts, the fact that you can trade in and out so easy does mean you need some discipline. You need some understanding of the event. Those are the two cons I'll give you. There are a couple more, I guess, other people could probably give you, but I don't want to go into everything. We also didn't go into all the pros, so we made it a little fair, in my opinion. Obviously, everyone can tell I'm a huge supporter of these event contracts, and going forward, exchange trading, whether they're through these event contracts or not, will be the future of sports betting. These sports books will be out the door because they simply charge too much. It's not an efficient market. Things always go to the best way of efficiency, and these exchanges will be that. I think it will be these event contracts. Let's jump into a couple examples. Example one, you're going to hold this to expiry. Let's make that real. You buy Texas at 45 cents, the Longhorns, to win. Yes, at 45 cents. And with these contracts, there is a yes side and a no side a lot of time. If I were you and I was just starting out, I would concentrate on the yes side. Just buy your yes and then sell it when you want to close. But in this example, you buy Texas at 45 cents, yes to win. You hold the contract until the end. Texas wins, you get back $1. You risk 45 cents and you made 55 cents. If Texas had lost that one, you simply lose the 45 cents that you paid. It's the most straightforward scenario. It's just like a money bet. You know, the math is much cleaner though. And the price equals the probability, which makes things much easier when you're looking at it that way, which everyone should be. If you want to be a profitable sports bettor, you need to be looking at implied probability. Also, one thing I want to mention is I'm going through these in cents, and a lot of the exchanges do have them structured as cents. You wouldn't necessarily, for example, I'm not out there buying, you know, a 50 cent product and trying to make 50 cents out of it. That's not exactly what I'm doing. You know, I'm buying 1,000 quantity of these 50 cent contracts and trying to make, you know, much more money off of it. So you can just scale up or down, for that matter, to one contract, the amount of money that you want to bet by the quantity that you buy. So those 45 cents, if you want to buy 100 of them, yeah, it's going to cost you $45 rather than 45 cents. And the quantity usually is there, liquidity is usually there, especially for these big events. Example two, let's trade this out before it actually expires, before the game is actually over. Let's go over an example of that. Now, let's say you bought that Texas at 45 cents again. We'll do the same bet. Longhorns to win, yes, at 45 cents. They jump out to a big lead. Those Longhorns, you know, they're a good football team. Mr. Manning has them going down drive after drive, and they're just taking a huge lead. The market pushes the price of that contract up. Remember, the contract price is going to fluctuate based on the probability. Once Texas goes down there and scores three drives in a row and their defense shuts down the other team, let's say Oklahoma, because Oklahoma sucks. Sorry, I'm a Texas fan. Everybody gets that. But they shut down Oklahoma. Now Texas is winning 21-0. Well, that probability of Texas winning at 45% is no longer that accurate. So the market is going to fluctuate based on that because people have real money on the line, so they have to change the prices. So now that Texas contract you bought at 45 cents is going to be, let's say, at 75 cents. It would probably be a little higher, but let's say at 75 cents. Now, you decide to sell right there. You want to take your profit. So you bought at 45. You go out to the market and you sell your yes at 75 cents. That's a 30 cent profit. Or in the case we're talking before, we buy 100 contracts. We bought at $45 and sold at $75. That's a $30 profit. Again, you could scale these however you want. I mean, you're talking about millions of dollars being offered on these. So if you want to go up to $1 million buying Texas, the liquidity is going to be there, especially on a money line bet, for you to do that at a minus, I would say, 102 line on both sides. That's how incredible these contracts are. I mean, that's the benefit of these exchanges. Let's bring it all together. You know, event contracts, they're like money line bets that you can trade. Buy a contract and the price you pay reflects the chance of that outcome. I like implied probability, but it reflects the chance of that outcome. Hold it to the end and you either get a dollar if your outcome is correct, if the team you bet on wins or covers for that matter, they have spreads and totals as well, or you get 0 cents back if your outcome does not succeed. If Texas does not win that football game and you bet on them, you simply lost the money that you bought that contract at and the contract would go to zero. Another thing we want to mention though is that you can trade out early and lock in your profits or limit your losses with them. It's the same yes or no question you're used to, but with more flexibility and a few more decisions along the way. I mentioned there are spreads and there are totals. They work essentially the same way as these bet the teams to win. And there's also alternate lines, but maybe for another day, because that can get a little confusing. It takes a little bit of time to get up. It's actually the simplicity that makes it hard to understand. Like, how could it be this simple? Like, how can it be that much better than betting at a sports book? Well, it is. Trust me. Take a little bit of time, research it. Maybe it'll be your thing. Kalshi is the one I use if you want to head over there and bet a college football game on Kalshi. You know, there's a good chance you're betting against me because I make markets over there. I'm putting up prices for Oklahoma or Texas in the example game. I'll have prices up there for both of you, for both of those teams. You can pick which one you want to bet against me on. And hey, let's see if you win that. Let's see if you win that one. But if anybody has any questions about those ones, about those exchanges specifically or how they work, feel free to let us know over there. WWCFB on X, the former Twitter. college_football_rundown at Instagram if you have any questions. Or you can email me, Wahl, W-A-H-L, @ collegefootballrundown.com. I'll try to answer your questions as best I can. I hope I did a good job explaining these betting exchanges. They are new, even to, you know, serious sports bettors, to sharps. It's still new to a lot of people, but if you take the time to understand it, I think it will be a much better avenue than betting on sports books. I will say that they don't have those player props. They don't have those parlays yet. Anyways, they'll have them in the future, I'm sure. They don't have stuff like that as of now. So if that's what you bet, you know, the exchanges probably won't have a lot of that for you, but it's probably for the better because 99% of the people should not be betting that stuff. Anyways, in my opinion. But let's move on. Let me check the time here. We got a little bit of time. We're at 30 minutes. Let's just do a game or two more. We got Pitt at West Virginia, backyard brawl. This one is, you know, I hate Pitt. I almost won so much money on West Virginia to win the national championship one year. And Pitt beat them in this backyard brawl, the last game of the season. West Virginia all set up to go to that national championship, and I would have made some serious coin on that one, but no. Dave Wannstedt in his Pittsburgh, I'm not going to say it on air, in his Pittsburgh football team won that football game. So I have, you know, I don't like Pitt much. They are favored in this one, -6.5, total of 58.5. Rivalry games like this, it usually plays tighter. You know, if you're going to bet someone in this one, you probably want to bet the dog. You probably want to bet West Virginia. That just goes for most rivalry games. This one's 230 over there on ESPN. Actually, you know what? Let me jump over to Kalshi right now. Jump over to one of the exchanges. Put our money where our mouth is. So if you're looking at the exchange on this one, you're looking at Pittsburgh versus West Virginia. It's very easy to find the games. You could search them just like you can with the sports book. You're looking at an order book showing Pittsburgh at 70 cents or 72 cents if you want to sell. So really what you can think about it is a 71% probability that Pittsburgh is going to win this football game. If you think it's higher than that, the probability is higher, simply buy Pittsburgh at yes. If you think the probability is lower, then you would jump over and likely buy West Virginia. You could get them right now for 29 cents. Again, they're always going to equal out or be very close to adding up to 100 because of how the probabilities work. Let's jump into another game. Memphis at Troy, Saturday, 11 a.m. on ESPNU. Memphis -3.5 on the road. Both teams top 40 in net yards per play. So you want to watch some offense? Check this one out. Special teams or turnovers. Games like this, I mean, special teams and turnovers decide it. When both teams are just scoring, 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 and none of the defense can stop, it comes down to who has the ball last or what special teams or defense can create a turnover to help decide this football game. So we shall see. Let me check. I'll give you the, just to keep things consistent, I'll give you the price over here on Kelce. If you want Memphis, you're paying 62 cents. 62 cents over there. You want Troy, you're paying 38 cents. So as we talked about before, that implies Troy has a 38% probability to win this football game, and Memphis has a 62% probability to win this football game. Makes sense? -3.5. Memphis -3.5 on the road. It all put it together. It's one and the same. Let's jump to the next one. Duke at Tulane. Tulane -1.5 at home. You know, Duke runs fast. Tulane slows the game down. It's going to be like a college basketball game. We're going to be talking about pacing issues. Who can control that pace? Whoever controls that pace, I think, has the better chance to win this football game. I think that if Tulane can get this game slowed down, perhaps the score is going to be a lot lower, because Duke, I mean, they're the other side of the fence. They're going to want to go fast. They're going to score a lot of points. So one thing when you're looking at this game, if you think Tulane's going to control it, you probably want to go with the under. If you think Duke's going to control this football game, you probably want to go with the over in this one. I'm going to jump over one more time to Kelce. I'll try to find this Duke at Tulane game. They have almost all the games up all the time, so this one should be up. Oh, right here. This is what we live for, baby. We're talking about Duke 50% probability right now. So if you want to buy Duke, that means you think Duke's going to win the football game, or you at least think at some point Duke's going to be a higher probability and you can sell it out. You go over there and you pay 50 cents to buy Duke. Man, this is a perfect example. Tulane, you think Tulane's going to win this football game? You go over there and you buy Tulane for 49 cents. So there's a 1 cent difference there. That's the spread. That's the amount you're paying. If you can think about it in your head, it'd be like essentially paying -101. That's how little juice you're paying on this. But you want to buy Duke? 50 cents. You want to buy Tulane? 49 cents. So pick your poison. You buy Tulane at 49 cents. They win. You make 51 cents in profit over there on the exchange. I try to wrap our story time into that a little bit. I hope I did a good job. It wasn't really planned, but I think it worked out. You know, we're going to jump into this week three. We're going to see what these football teams can get done. I mean, I'm excited for it. I don't know if anybody else is excited for it. What I wanted to do now is, before we do end, I'm going to do the pick'em by myself. I know it's been a terrible year so far for me on the pick'em. I'll wait to mention Story's pick until next week. I'm going to mention my pick till next week since he's not here and I'm by myself. I will look through, though. What I wanted to do is I wanted to do Notre Dame -6.5 at home, but I don't want to take another favorite, really. I want to find a dog in this week's slate. I want to start betting dogs a lot more on the college football rundown. I thought about taking Georgia too, but they're the same, you know, situation, because Georgia's the favorite and there's no way I'm going to bet on Tennessee. So what am I going to do here? I'm going to jump over and I'm going to take Georgia Tech +4 against Clemson. And I mean, I didn't talk about this game too much, but Georgia Tech is the home team in this one. Georgia Tech is a good football team. Clemson played good football last week. They didn't play great football week one, in my opinion. They got the W. I mean, they didn't play bad. Don't get me wrong. Oh, no, excuse me. LSU got the W. They did not get the W. They got the W last week, and they played good football. I think this week, Georgia Tech just can win the game outright. I think the home dog, you know, we're not going to bet on the money line this one. Obviously, it's the college football pick 'em. So I get points if I want. I'm going to take the points at 4. I think they cover that. Even if they don't win the football straight up, which I think they will win the football game straight up, I think that they can cover that 4. I think that they can get it within a field goal game. So that's what I'm going to do this week. Georgia Tech +4. Mark it up. Hopefully, I can avoid this losing streak. But I think that's going to be it for our episode. I try to keep it decently short, but we ended up going 39 minutes, so I apologize to everyone that had to listen to me for those 39 minutes. I do hope, we went a little deeper into the story time. I hope I could clear some things up with the exchange and maybe even convert some people over to betting on there, because it is much, in the long run anyways, a much better way to bet than on the sports books. Again, any questions, feel free to reach out to us. Any of the ways I mentioned before, you can catch any of our socials in the show notes or the email in the show notes if you need it. Feel free, post a question. I'll explain a little bit more. You have a question about any of the last week's episodes, story time specifically? You have any questions for Story? Let me know. I'll get him the question. We will get you some answers. Any suggestions, you know, anything you didn't like, let me know. A lot of the didn't likes come in, so feel free. I don't mind. I love getting some criticism, especially when it's positive criticism. But if it's not, let me know. I can handle it. I'm a big boy. Until the next episode, though, I'm Wall. Stay sharp, everyone.